State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is back with us for our Tacky Talk. We missed you last week, Tacky.
Yeah, our schedule didn't sync up last week, Joe. So sorry to the audience about a week lacking of Tacky Talk. However, if you're a local political junkie, or you may not be listening to this if you don't live in Quincy, but we had a very exciting week last week in local elections. So maybe you're not a Quincy resident listening, but definitely check out WPTV's report on that. But also, the Quincy Sun actually had quite good in-depth story on this online.
Was pretty really historic election when you have the majority of the sitting incumbents removed from office. So that really was historic.
Oh, absolutely is. For those who aren't local, because I know that I have some friends that listen to this that don't live in Quincy, it is a nine-person city council. It is six wards, three at large. I know local people know this. I've never seen this in 30 years of observation. We have five incumbent councillors removed, and then you have two open seats, of which one is a return person who's been there before, and an open seat with a brand new candidate, leaving you two out of seven that are incumbents on the council. It's the first time we have a majority female council, so women are five out of nine for the first time. And you have two Asian Americans on the council as well for the first time. And then on the school committee, you also were elected your first Asian. So, and you have two open seats, two brand new members of the school committee as well, with one incumbent remaining to pick your top three. So yeah, it is very historic in Quincy because, as pointed out to me, the last time we've seen a big change was back in 2011, 2001, actually, with Mayor Phelan. Well, then not well, school committee Mayor Phelan beating incumbent Mayor Sheets, but also you had four new city councilors, but all of them were actually either on the school committee or longtime community activists, very much involved. So four, I was pointed out to me, was the last time we had a major changeover.
Yeah, that's, I mean, almost 25 years ago. So certainly going to be a whole new look and feel to the city council next year.
Yeah, it's not unusual to see like one, two, up to three. For example, 12 years ago it was three new city councilors. Seven is monumentally seismic change.
Yeah, no question. And that's in a non-mayoral election year as well. So that's pretty substantial.
It is. And the voter turnout, I believe, was close to 22%. I thank everybody that went out and voted. I am running for re-election, everyone, just to put it out there. So, I hope you think kindly of me next year. But voter participation was significantly higher than the preliminary in September, because the preliminaries do matter. It whittles down the number required by charter to the number you get in the fall, even though it's just Ward 6 and a large race really had more than minimum candidates of two and six, and respectively. Participation really matters, and these voters have their say, and nothing's more apparent to what voters are thinking until the election. However, it is a 22% turnout, so the folks that really care about the issues of the city went out of the way to do it. And mail-in ballots, again, is very, very, very popular. We talked about this multiple times about early voting and mail-in ballots. And in this particular race, mail-in ballots made a big difference at the at-large level.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it flipped the at-large race in the end there when when those were tallied in.
Yeah, you were front row center to watch that, as QATV had their extended coverage that evening.
That's
And
right.
the great.
Thank all our volunteers for helping us with that as well. We couldn't do it without them. They've every precinct, 31 precincts covered with volunteers phoning the results back in here.
Yep, and also good work to Mark. I know Mark is not a guest star in your show here, but we can't leave Mark out as well, and John and everyone else in the QATV studio that had great coverage and also made sure everyone got a fair amount of time to be on QATV to talk about the races and issues important to them and why they run for office.
Yeah, that's what we're all about here. Absolutely. So, and we will continue to do that as long as we can. So, and as you mentioned, state election next year.
Yes, it is. As you may be aware, three candidates on the Republican sides announced for governor. As you can tell, I'm not naming names because I don't want to play favorites nor influence voters at this cycle. And this is a nonpartisan QATV nonprofit show, so I'm trying to not to be, make any kind of specific statements about people themselves. But you do have three so far announced for the governor, Republican governor. They do actually have to go to the Republican convention and get 15% of the convention votes to make it onto the primary ballot, provided they make the minimum number of signatures to be collected. Nomination papers should be coming out sometime in the month of February for all statewide and congressional candidates. Congressman Lynch right now appears to have two primary Democratic challenges, appears, because we don't know until signatures are gathered. And although I am pretty confident that Senator or Moulton, I'm sorry, Senator Ken, Markey, challenger Congressman Moulton, is pretty much guaranteed at this point.
Looks like a pretty much definite race there, yeah.
Sorry about that, Senator. I was misspoke about Congressman's title, but no, that seems to be the one that I know is set in stone. Everything else, stuff can change. To my knowledge, the state delegation is coming back, or would like to come back more accurately next year until somebody makes an official announcement otherwise.
Right, yeah, well, that'll start to materialize after the first of the year, so we'll wait and see on that.
Yeah, but I am intending, and
Yes,
I
you've
am.
said that many times already,
Yeah.
Dagi.
So n people. So some of my friends who think they need another job. No, I'm not going anywhere yet.
Okay. Something we can talk about is the federal government shutdown came to an end yesterday.
Yeah, it kind of had to at some point. I mean, once you got to the air traffic controllers, as Ronald Reagan also learned many years ago, if you're old enough to remember that, you lose air traffic, pretty much everything in the world stops in this country. We learned that in COVID as well, when there was no air travel, how much the economy was really negatively impacted in like a bazillion levels. So, the SNAP program, the air traffic control issue, eventually started to create some fractures among Democratic senators, including those that were not running for re-election, to try to cut a deal. As I've stated before, do you trust them to honor the deal? Has always been my question mark. Some of that deal includes guaranteeing that federal workers that were terminated returned to their jobs. Back pay would be guaranteed for all federal employees. SNAP programs would be sacrosanct, according to this bill. Do government funding only to the end of January. So this is not a long-term solution. It's really a band-aid short-term solution. The tax credit vote on the expanded ACA, a tax credit vote, it was supposed to be guaranteed before year's end in the US Senate. Whether that promise is made, well, we shall see. However, there was no equal promise made in the House, which means, regardless of anything, the other House branch would not get to make a statement. And Democrats, well, let's call it what it is. It's called a vote spotting. This happens a lot in my world. Republicans, they vote spot us to try to make us look poor. Regarding certain issues they think is very popular. Whether it's popular is another matter, folks, but they believe it is. So, the idea is that, going to election cycle, if people vote against a certain popular issue or an issue that should be popular in your congressman or state, and you vote against it, it becomes a campaign matter. We shall see if those agreements are honored. As I've said multiple times, it's very hard to do business if you can't honor, you can't trust the other side to honor the agreement. And and part of that included no revisions bills in regarding the shutdown, temporary, well, it's really a temporary bill to January 30th, but they would not do a revision to that specific bill like they've done other spending bills in the past, where they all thought they had a deal and it turned out to be that we're going to screw you on your deal.
Right. No, and it's in writing, so let's hope.
Let's hope. I mean, like I said, the challenges is that, this is a gig. Your word is your bond. End of story. There is no written contracts. There's none of this, like, written in blood statements, right? You shake hands. It's your agreement. If you can't honor your agreement, your word is no good. Your word is no
Right.
good. It's hard to make a new deal.
Right. Not only with this, but with anything in the future as well.
Yeah, how do you compromise against an individual that won't honor their side of the compromise?
Right. You're not
This is
going
a
to want to.
business of compromise.
You're not going to want to do business with them like you wouldn't want to do business with a company that reneged on its warranty.
100% correct. So we'll see how, like, so we'll see how it plays out in DC over the next few months as they head into holidays. One of the other exciting, or maybe not exciting, depending on who you are, is people didn't realize that Speaker Johnson wouldn't sit a Congress person until now because of the Epstein file votes, which got some media attention because this Congress person was in favor of releasing Epstein files, and that you can actually override a committee by having a majority vote on the floor, which has now been achieved, which will be coming up for a vote because it's now become unavoidable. But you want some little political games, folks. I mean, refusing to sit a special election congressperson strictly to prevent that vote until you got to the fact that you needed the vote for the purposes of ending the government shutdown. I mean, these are real, like, that's like a real political, game there. I mean, and people have
It's a
seen.
power move. It's a power control move, yeah.
Yeah, because I think the individual was elected in September.
Yes, that's what I read also. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time waiting to get sworn in.
Yeah, the voters of that district, said we want this person to represent us, and now.
Yeah, and they were disenfranchised for essentially 2 months.
Right.
I mean, that's grossly unfair to the constituency of the newly elected member.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if there's any repercussions from that.
We shall see. Again, politics can be a tough sport. Like I say over and over again, more than ever, people expect perfection from imperfect people. And we're all imperfect people, but people want perfection from all of us.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a rocky ride next year. But I will say this, as a Democrat, because we all know that, people do not realize the change in SNAP program. And the feeling people got that was very bad for everyone in terms of making sure people have food is the tip of the iceberg. We've already put in the HouseNet bulletin, that's my newsletter. I encourage people to go to the HouseNet Community Council website if you want to subscribe to their monthly newsletter, because I'm actually part of their newsletter. Certain individuals that lost their SNAP program will definitely lose the SNAP program next federal fiscal cycle on October 1. This includes permanent, I'm sorry, this includes certain legal statuses, immigrants that are legal here, such as refugees, human traffic victims. Also, that if you're an able-bodied individual, you will need to work a minimum of 80 hours a month, which I don't know how people can find a job 80 hours a month. To qualify for your benefits and maintain income eligibility. So you only can make so much money 80 hours a month, which again, I'm not sure how you do that. And in certain high unemployment communities will no longer get a presumption to receive SNAP benefits of people who are income qualified, including veterans. Veterans is a demographic that received a lot of preferential treatment in the SNAP program. That's going away. And I think I'm aware that certain individuals, very much Republicans and pro-veteran, well, they're taking away veterans' benefits in forms of food assistance.
Wow, that has not been publicized much. Wow.
Well, they've been doing a good job downplaying that.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard of it, actually.
And then you also have people with certain disabilities will also no longer receive SNAP program, depending on how you want to define able-bodied. And whether we still have a huge question mark in our mind about whether certain mental challenges will be considered disability in the SNAP program, I'm still scratching my head trying to understand exactly what's what because they're changing everything over. So I mean, some folks who felt a lot of pain this year so far because of government shutdown will feel this pain again come October of next year under the big beautiful bill. And that's just one of hundreds of programs that we still don't know how they're going to roll out because the government's been shut down. And because they're going to shut down, no one can tell anybody The regulation and implementation process of the bill.
Right. Wow. I first I've heard of this, Jackie. That's eye-opening.
Yeah, multiple advocacy groups, Project Bread and other similar groups naturally, have been breaking down the bill and identifying groups that are going to be highly vulnerable when this is fully implemented in October 1st of next year. So, as I like to say, people like to pick on the most vulnerable first because they're the ones that, have the least power. And as an individual, on my ethics report, I do disclose I'm on Work Inc.'s board. Been on the board for many years. I learned about a lot of issues in that community and the challenges of which, and how we evolved programs regarding individual disabilities and how it used to be. And it really took parents and loved ones of those caretakers and other individuals to speak up on their behalf. And people don't realize things like SPED programs, special education programs, really is a program of the 70s. Yeah, education had a seismic shift about 60, almost 60 years ago now that didn't exist before. And people think that this has always been the way. No, people had to fight hard to get these programs to address people who are different, to receive equal benefits in terms of education and status and non-discrimination. And now we're moving in the opposite direction under this federal government. And the many people are trying to figure out how much of the state can backfill these things
I was
and
just
how
going
much
to ask
reason
about that.
and how much resources we can do it. So, for example, I do get emails asking us to use the Rainy Day Fund to backfill the SNAP program. The chairman of Ways and Means in the House, Aaron Merkowitz, has already sent letters to our three credit reporting companies, credit agency companies in on Wall Street, inquiring about what would happen to our credit rating and use the stabilization fund for these programs that are not state programs, they're federal programs, with no guarantee of federal reimbursement because this issue is going to repeat itself as we go along on federal cutbacks. And if I use state money on a federal program, because stabilization funds and our trust funds are designed to address shortfalls to ensure we can pay our bonds timely. And try to maintain our programs the best we can during certain economic tough times. And this is different because this is a federal creation. What would happen? And a bond rating is sacrosanct to the state government, especially in higher interest rate environment we're still in now, compared to what we had before during COVID, when it was close to 0%. So, I understand the need. I do understand the challenges here, but people don't realize that when the rainy day fund doesn't get filled up quickly, it's a decades long process of just really being careful with your money. And then, secondly, if we start paying for federal programs, the federal government's going to expect them to do this all the time.
Right, and then that becomes part of the state line item, right, in the state budget.
Yeah, trying to comply with federal law. On a federal program. That's not our program.
So it's, I mean, it's not a long-term solution to the problem.
It is actually not, because as you've heard, it's like 240-ish million, give or take, per month in SNAP programs. It doesn't take hard to math out that's well into billions of dollars.
Well, the more immediate concern, I'm sure, is the healthcare impacts, right? Once the ACA goes away.
So some people are already feeling it now. I talked to one of my friends, small business owner. People keep getting that a lot of ACA users are small business and gig workers. I'll keep repeating that because I have friends that are gig workers and small business owners that use the ACA.
That's what it
And
was designed for, really, right?
it's a big part of their regarding local small Main Street economy, right? Main Street's very important to all of us. And they're already seeing rate hikes when they did the reapplication at the beginning of this month. They're still not sure exactly how it's going to run because explanation is not good because no one in government is working at the time. And now that government's reopened, they're hoping to get some better answers. And then the expiration of the so-called COVID Biden tax credits on the ACA ends of the day. It's end of the year, which is the principal reason they did the shutdown. And it's definitely becoming a very popular campaign issue. And what does it mean to us down here, folks? Well, I always keep mindful of MassHealth is Medicare, Medicaid. They administer the program, right? The Attorney General has a Medicaid fraud division, Medicare fraud division, which is actually really MassHealth. And MassHealth has its own auditors. I've actually had a my orthodontist actually had a some math problems in accounting, and we had to work at MassHealth to make sure that the accounting was corrected. So there is like auditing, but it's a large volume of consumers. And I think some in the area, perhaps 200,000 people in the state, are going to be negatively affected by the end of the ACA tax credits, and it's going to impact your ability to do business as a result. And what does that mean to us? Because we all know that Romney Care, so to speak, came out of Massachusetts, so-called our version of universal health care, so to speak. I know we can quibble about the definition of that, but the precursor to ACA came out of Massachusetts, where basically the framework was not identical. What they did in
That's
DC
right.
wasn't identical, but we were the framework they worked off of.
Yes.
And because of the ACA stuff, we integrate our system to there because the money was there. Well, the money's no longer there. How do we address it? Because we are no longer budgeted like we were before the ACA money came in as part of our integration.
Right.
Can we actually make up that money? Because obviously that money was reallocated to other programs because we had a degree of savings there. So, a healthcare program that people, like children healthcare, for example, we do provide healthcare for children, was able to be expanded, for example, because we're able to get federal dollars and ACA to help us with part of that cost. So, it's not, we don't deficit spend because we can't print money.
How much would that cost? Do you know, Techie?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a scary thing. I had a long day of meetings yesterday, of which one included talking to students and administrators of the Asian American Pacific Islander Native Hawaiian program that the Biden had put in place to help those students in Bunker Hill, Middlesex, UMass Boston, UMass Lowell, the four big colleges and community colleges in the state that are recipients of those funds of $1.5 million, and had to walk them through, unfortunately, the lack of information we have about how we're going to do things. And while that is not a federal law program, it was an optional program created by the Department of Education under President Biden, that is all gone now. And it's not the only one. There's many other programs that have not made the news that the Department of
Right.
Education was terminated funding for. But $1 million does not sound a lot, but it's a lot when you're facing a situation where you're looking at potentially billions of dollars for lost federal funding.
Right. Yeah.
And we received word that the governor's trying to cut MassHealth by 5%. I think he anticipated Medicaid cuts that we don't know exactly what they look yet. And you've probably read in the news, the Boston Herald in particular had put an article out about the governor trying to do buyouts with certain
Yes, I saw that.
departments
Yeah.
to reduce headcount. It was like a $10,000 or $20,000,
Think it was 20,000. Yeah.
the $20,000 buyout program to lower headcount by giving them a reason to leave government.
Right.
But like I say, we may have a money for a program, but if you have no person to administer the program, the money just sits there.
Yes, I see. Yeah, okay.
So I do have serious concerns about that because, it's common sense, people. You can have all the program money in the world, but there's no one to run the program, it really doesn't matter.
Just sits in the bank. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, just you're right, literally, it would just sit in the bank. It would not be distributed, right?
Right.
So I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out because when the Democratic caucus last week, was like, oh yeah, she's attempting to try to find 5% savings in, MassHealth, specifically the Medicaid portion. I'm like, oh boy, it's
Because
a
that's the biggest nut, right, in the budget.
healthcare, the Medicare Medicaid program consumes almost 30% of the state budget.
Okay, yeah, so it's a big one.
It's a 50-50 split between us and defense. And as I talked about last time, the cost shifts, for example, right? The SNAP program starting next fiscal cycle, they're going to cost shift a 50-50 employee cost to 75 state, 25% employees, which means your state tax dollars. We've got to find a way to backfill that amount. And because we have to backfill more of the employee costs, that also will inhibit us from hiring new people.
Okay.
And they could do this to Medicaid for all we know. They've not made an announcement yet. We don't know. Right. And same thing with unemployment. Unemployment's shared costs with the feds as well. We don't know. And I'm already aware that they have a shortage of people because I got like four constituent emails a week now of people having severe problems trying to get to unemployment, DUA. So we already are in an employment shortfall debt. So we I as you guys all can hear constantly from me, I just do not have answers for these things because we don't
Well,
know.
impossible to formulate a budget when you don't have the details.
And is the reason why we underfunded the fiscal year 26 budget by almost $800 million, and we've really resisted going to rainy day fund, which is almost $8 billion. And then the governor's obviously trying to find cost savings, 1% in all secretariats plus now 5% try to reduce mass health. And then they're looking for more ways to not spend more money. They're really hiring freeze across the board, except for essential employees. And even in the House of Representatives, the Speaker has a hiring freeze as well regarding any new hires. So you lose a body, you're not getting one back until we can figure out what's going on in the bigger budget picture. So, yeah, this is we're trying really hard here to prepare for something we can't see.
It's flying blind, really.
Yeah, and like I talked about the SNAP program, obviously now all experienced, 16,303 participants in Quincy alone, $240 million over 12 months. Just saying.
That's households. That's not people. So there's more people than that.
That's correct. I don't have the breakdown of individuals in each household. So that's why I use the word participant a lot, because 16,303 participants. I don't know the number of people served in the household, and it can range from $10 a week to over $50 a week. And we saw definitely a spike increase of purchases in grocery stores prior to a SNAP program ending on November 1 or temporary ending. And we're getting mixed signals out of DC. Initially, the courts in Massachusetts and Boston, Rhode Island said you have to pay. So they announced right away we're doing partial pay. Then they announced that the Department of Agriculture said we're going to pay it all because the court says so. Then over the weekend, the president said no, we're going to sue because I don't want to pay it all. And it becomes a very confused mixed messaging from our standpoint. Put aside the real mixed messaging, to the public when the administrators of program. And the secretary says one thing and the president says another, it becomes real troublesome. And that's why when we received the SNAP funds for the Department of Agriculture, it moved it right away out before an opportunity for them to claw it back because of lack of clarity from DC in the Trump administration. What are you expecting us to do?
Yeah, I know the governor immediately said, send it out, go out, buy the food you need.
Yeah, I don't know how many people noticed that. Secretary of Agriculture said one thing, a few hours later, the president said another.
Yeah,
And
there's a lot of confusion.
now, if you want a tacky perception of inside baseball, what I think is going on
Of course, that's
is
what we want. That's why we're here, Jackie.
I think this may be the first time, I think it's the first time there was a discussion inside the Oval Office. There was a disagreement between the president and some of his internal people that advised him regarding how to handle SNAP. Because the mixed messaging that came out was really mixed messaging in short periods of time, including the press secretary. She actually said one thing herself. The president said something later on. There was a lack of, because we know this president is very controlling regarding messaging. And very much have his staff in sync with his own messaging. This is the first time I've seen very clear confusion on a crucial issue that affects 42 million Americans.
The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing.
Yeah, and the fact is, even though the government's reopening and the fact that the Trump administration is still pursuing the lawsuit saying they don't ever have to pay SNAP is again another demonstration of how much presidential power should be allowed for them to basically not comply with the law. And now you're also seeing in the Supreme Court regarding the tariff issue, there's a lot of questions being asked by justices about the extent of presidential power against congressional powers. particularly in something that's actually in the Constitution. Tariffs is a congressional power in the Constitution. Yeah, they can succeed some of it, but their instructions to the president of utilization, subject to some interpretation, obviously. But it's still instructions, and whether or not those instructions matter because that's what the law says.
Yeah, I think we're going to start to see a lot more questions raised as we enter the midterms next year.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, as like you say, all branches of government like to preserve their little silos. And if the executive branch keeps not complying with the federal branches, the judicial branch's orders and rulings, judicial branch will respond in kind. When certain cases come up for them to to exercise again, their rulings and orders do matter. The question is, as we go to election cycle next year, how does Congress behave? And especially a majority party, which is the Republican Party, is the majority party. How do the majority party members go back and respond to constituencies? Because they have now felt pain. And this pain will come up again and snap, as I just pointed out, when the fiscal year starts next year. Because again, politics people, they're so clever, they're gonna not implement this to next year, but the fiscal year starts October 1 and election day's in November. Just saying. So they're trying to protect themselves against Republican primaries, which is before October 1. Yeah, you can see where I'm going, folks. And every state has a primary on a different day. Ours is September, but other people have primaries in the spring.
That's right.
So we can't use Massachusetts' experience election cycles as the template for every state because every state has different election cycles other than the November elections, election day.
And when they say the buck stops here, it does. It stops at Congress's door. They're the ones that control the purse strings.
And people, again, to recognize who's the party in power, and the president is Republican, and people generally know who the president is, but those know who the committee chairs are. I don't know who the committee chairs are, honestly, in Congress, but we all know who the president is, and generally the president of power is perceived as the person responsible, so it's the party's Republican Party. Flip it over to Democrats, exactly the same thing happens, right? And I've said this before a couple of weeks ago, as a member of a supermajority party, no one blames the Republicans for anything in the state because they're the minority party. So obviously the punching bag, when rightfully so, I'll be honest with you, is the majority party. And I am one of those folks that becomes a punching bag sometimes when constituents are unhappy or special interest groups are unhappy. And I accept that. That is part of the role, and this is just the reality of it. But my good friends, actually, I have a lot of friends actually on the other side of the aisle. Just
Well,
saying.
it's all in good nature.
It is, but it's this is political reality, folks. And I think people sometimes forget that I'm very conscientious of these dynamics. So we'll wait and see. A lot of still conversation my level in state government about how we're going to try to address an issue that we cannot see what's coming. And how do we respond? I mean, as much as the attorney general is doing her job suing the Trump administration, the legislature and the governor at the same time, though, we still have to address the issues presented at hand, even if a lawsuit's pending.
What is going on at the State House these days?
It's last week. Oh my God, we actually are moving some bills now, actually. Let's see, we talked about some of the bilingual seal education bill. We talked about using words that aren't acceptable regarding individuals' disabilities bill. We did a bill on home care assistance. We're licensing them. The House voted moved that bill out. These aren't new ideas. They're actually somewhat old ideas, but they've been updated and tweaked and improved over the course of a couple of different sessions as we try to sort it out. There is movement on an energy bill, which they found out the votes came out last night about almost 7 p.m. It was like 6:49. They got an email from the Telecommunications and Energy Committee that bill's on the way out of committee. So I've not had a chance to read the fact sheet yet because I got it late last night and I was out to 7 o'clock last night anyway, going to events. So I was already kind of exhausted before I got that email. So we were supposed to have a debate today, actually, and they're going to move it to next week. We're closing sessions. We're closing formal sessions. We'll still have informal sessions after November 19th. So I suspect we're teeing up this energy bill, which will be subject to amendments. And we're still waiting for what Ways and Means does with it. Just because it comes out of telecoms, utilities, and energy doesn't mean Ways and Means is not going to tweak the bill again. And if the timeline is correct, we may see Ways and Means release a bill either Monday late or maybe Tuesday morning for a debate Wednesday. If they're planning a debate on Tuesday, then they'll release the bill Monday. If they release the bill Friday, Ways and Means release something Friday, it'd be a little surprising because the rules are set up where we really only have an afternoon to do amendments prior to debate. So that's kind of how the calendar works now under the rules, is that bills released from Ways and Means sent to third reading, committee third readings ready to go. We get about the afternoon before the debate to file amendments.
You see. Okay. All right. Tell me about this home care assistance licensing bill, Jackie.
Yeah, this is something that hasn't been addressed for a long time regarding home care assistance. So these are folks that come to your home and take care of your parents or other people who are having some physical challenges.
Like
And
visiting nurse?
no, these are not licensed nurses. These are more like people that come and help out the house. They can't, but there's not licensing to it.
I
And
see.
there's no minimum standards across the board.
Right.
So even the industry itself is having a lot of challenges because of the big supplies, short form of workers available. And it's resulted in very poor standards. And the industry itself had recognized this is unacceptable. We can't continue to operate this. And they worked with the Committee on Elder Affairs actually for a couple of cycles, not one legislative cycle, to come up with some basic minimum standards, including things like mandatory reporting. They're going to become mandatory reporters. So if they're in a home with someone they're caring for and they see theft or abuse, they're required to report things like that,
Okay,
which
all right.
makes common sense.
Yeah.
Minimum medical training, you should know CPR, right? I mean,
Yes.
so there'd be more accountability of the home care assistance agencies, but also more accountability among the employees themselves, because now everyone's working at a standard that everyone knows what it is, as opposed to this patchwork of standards and just random people show up and, well, we're stopping that in the House. These bills are still in the Senate, so it's not like we
Okay.
have a law yet. So just remind folks, these are just things sent to the House from the
Okay. All
Senate.
right.
I'm sorry,
Is
sent
it
to the Senate.
private companies you're talking about?
I'm not going to name companies,
Oh no,
but
but they're privately
these
owned.
are private companies, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's a reflection of a changing economy and industries realizing that how they're operating is going to work anymore. Participation was very important from these industries to help out in understanding what is not working, what needs to be done, and how do we tighten it up, mostly for public safety.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that there hasn't been something already in place to kind of make sure there are minimum standards set.
Yeah, and this is an industry that's been around for decades. It's not like a
Right.
brand new industry.
Right.
So, but I think a lot of the workforce shortage issues.
Yeah.
We have a larger immigrant population. Multilingual assistance becomes more important, and this also sets up. I won't say, I don't like to use the word legitimate, but it gives people some more confidence in an industry that cares for vulnerable populations.
And recourse if something goes wrong, right?
That's correct, because you
Yeah.
can yank a license and it can be investigated. But my key one was the mandatory reporting, because I
Yes.
actually do have a bill out there that requires people who do elder care to become mandatory reporters as well, which hasn't really been moving, unfortunately, in the
Oh.
committee level. But if you're working in an assisted living facility and you see an elder that appears to have some abuse going on, you should report that abuse.
Yes, oh, for sure, definitely, yes. That's interesting. I'd like to follow that one if you don't mind. I'm curious about that one.
Yeah, I've had to file this bill for several cycles now. It's just having trouble getting out of elder affairs.
Okay.
Still not sure exactly what the issue is. I modeled the bill after the mandatory reporting for children in schools, and also in the disability community. If you work with the disability community, you also have mandatory reporter as well. So I'm not sure exactly what's why I keep getting held up in elder affairs, but. It seems like a common sense issue, especially as we're a growing older population. I think our average age is like 38 or 39 now in Massachusetts. It's something like that.
And rising, yeah.
And rising, we're a very old, medium age state.
Yes, yes.
And both of us will be in the situation at some point soon.
Oh, I'm much closer to it than you are. Yes. If I'm lucky enough to make it, yeah.
So, That's actually part of our looking at it, because we do recognize that we're aging and, we're not having as many kids here as we really need to have a lot more kids, by the way. That's how you bring the minimum age down.
Don't look at me for
Don't
that.
look at me either. As I like to say, I'm still blissfully single. But no, this is a real, part
It's
of our
true,
public
yeah.
policy. It's part of how we do public policy, right? We actually have to be aware of the changing demographics.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, how much of that can be attributed to the cost of housing? Because college students graduate and leave, right?
Yes, very much so. The high cost of living, and also young folks being more conscientious of what the cost of childcare in terms of the long picture, right? Not necessarily just having a child, but also looking at college, daycare services, if you want to do early education, where do you want to live, school systems. I mean, it's much more engaged than my parents, who just basically bought a home, decided to have kids, and try to move closer to a school when the time came. I mean, it was, I'm pretty
All the
confident my
time.
parents didn't have a long plan here.
Right. No, but you could do that then.
Yes, you could, even though my dad's first house had an interest rate of like 12%, but
Yeah, but ignorance is bliss. We didn't know any better.
well, your home was also like under $50,000 back then,
That
too.
too, right. Yeah, now they're talking about 50-year mortgages.
Yeah, that's not going to work. I mean, you're not going to get back. You have almost no equity at home at 50 years.
Right, I know.
There's literally no equity left, meaning that your interest rate's going to surpass the principal at a certain point, to a point that your value, your home, actually literally has no value against the debt.
Well, that's what caused the first crisis, right? Is that people were underwater in their property.
And they were giving out bad loans to people who couldn't pay them.
Right.
And this one creates, 50 years creates a whole different kind of situation where I'm trying to sell my home 30 years into a 50-year loan. Well, you just lost a lot of equity on the home sale, because, when you sell your home, try to buy a new home, may not want to do 50 years, maybe you're going to do 30 years instead, or 20 years on a new home. You're not going to get enough value remaining, because most of it went to pay the 50-year debt. And
Right.
then
So people
if
will
you're
just
like,
stay put. Yeah.
yeah, and if you're, let's say, in your 50s, for example, and decide to get a move to a smaller home, why would you take a 50-year loan to begin with, right? I get the whole issue about monthly payments, but you have to weigh it against, in case of property, you have to weigh against the valuations.
Right.
And if the loan exceeds the value growth, you're losing the value of property.
Yeah, you might as well just rent at that point, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. You're 100% right, because it's equivalent. You just rented a house.
Right.
Plus, you pay the maintenance and all the other
And
association
property taxes and
issues.
insurance and yeah.
And it may actually inhibit you from getting a home equity loan. And for older folks, if this makes sense for you, it may inhibit your ability to get a proper reverse mortgage.
That too, right. Yep. So probably not going to fly.
I'd be interested to see how it's presented. The banking industry may not even like this idea, because if you default and you get 30 out of 50, the ability for the bank to recover the loan on a foreclosure, and they hate foreclosing on houses because the last thing they want to do is have a house.
Right.
They may not get any kind of legitimate recovery against the remaining 20 years.
Yeah.
It sounds wonderful on paper, and the president likes to put stuff like that out. But yeah, I've done a little bit of homework, folks, on this, as you can tell. And that wasn't part of his consideration when he made that statement.
Yeah. Well, they'd have to have no prepayment penalties, so it might help somebody get into a property, but then if they can pay it off early, that might be, a process to go through.
It may be. Again, this idea was floated. Details are lacking. But I mean, people just focus in on the monthly payment and not thinking about the longer
Right.
picture regarding the home valuation. This isn't like a student loan or a car loan. I mean, this is an asset that you're going to live in, an asset that you hope to use as part of your retirement plan. Even though your valuation somewhat offset because of monthly maintenance costs, or every couple of years maintenance costs, whatever those costs may be. The fact that you're a primary resident, in fact, you have shelter, is the higher valuation against the maintenance costs. But when you look at long-term valuation in terms of, retirement purposes, or perhaps buying a new home later on, or need equity for the purposes of maybe add on to the house to increase value, or maybe help pay for your kids' college for the equity, those type of loans can really work against you.
Yeah. My gosh, we ran out of time, Jackie. We're just talking,
Yeah,
talking,
we covered a
talking.
little bit of local. We covered a little bit of federal. We actually covered a bit of state, believe it or not. Even though I didn't talk about a lot about bills, there is a lot of activities going on in the state. So I'll give you a really briefly today before I started. We proceeded to have a Massachusetts Bridges Commission today, annual meeting. Talked to the commissioner of DCR, the new commissioner. Give you an idea of my schedule yesterday. Like I said, early in the morning, I had to talk to Asian students and faculty about the lack of federal programs at those four colleges, but also had a meeting about secondhand car dealerships regarding how lemon law is good for them and why you shouldn't mess with the lemon law, but also issues regarding tow industries, notification to lien holders of a vehicle. Yesterday, I talked to FINRA director about how do we try to make it better to help people of who are indigent who had to bury a loved one and went through a lot of examples of the challenges associated not just the loved ones but also the industry itself on how to address this issue and how DTA does not pay properly and their paperwork is a complete disaster and how they're not really helpful, which was a great conversation. We had a conversation with the food workers union about that self-checkout. There was a self-checkout bill that Senator Feeney filed, and we had a long conversation about. And how do we address safety for the employees and actually how to improve customer experience? I hate self-checkout, for the record. Not positive. My experience has not been positive on that matter. And then we also talked about whether we should allow veterinarians to do remote care analysis, diagnosis of your pets, without actually ever seeing the pet in person. We had a conversation with the ASPCA about that. So, as you can see, I have a very diverse committee regarding virtual pet care, self-checkout counters, used car dealerships, Asian American programs losing funding. I had a, and then of course, Representative Reyes from Lawrence asked me to visit her fundraiser last night. I didn't go to Lawrence, it was in Boston, but it was, going out and meeting colleagues and so forth as well. So, give you an example of a very busy day for me. That's
Yes.
what a very busy day looks like.
And we saw you at the Veterans Day parade and ceremony here in Quincy, too.
Thank you to you, brave souls, that came out on a day where I could not feel my face anymore.
That wind was brutal.
Yeah, I lost my hat at one point. I don't know if QATV caught that, but
Oh, I don't think we caught that. No, we'll have to go back in the footage and look.
people who see me know I like my fedoras in the winter in particular. And it was not a good day to have a fedora.
but it's important to thank veterans, certainly.
Yeah, and their families. Thank you to the veterans and families and celebrate, their service to us to keep ourselves safe and our freedom isn't free. But part of Veterans Day is also their families. And, Sergeant Lester was the guest speaker, and I was at Morrison Post afterwards. And, thank you very much for sharing. I think people don't realize veteran stories, real life stories about their lives, makes us understand a little better about how veterans' families live, whether they're a child of a veteran, their veteran is a child of a family member, or they themselves have families, and their experiences and their lives. And I tell people all the time, everyone's got a story. And I always say again, you don't know what your neighbor's story is until you hear the story.
That's
And
right.
there's a lesson you learn from those stories, and also a great appreciation of people from the stories you hear.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Now, how do we hear about your story, Jackie?
Well, you actually, I think people are tired of me at this point. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. The office is open. State House has been open. Room 42. If you're around, please feel free to visit. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tackey.chan@mahouse.gov. I get a lot of emails, as you all know. I keep telling you that. And we do prioritize constituent services first. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and corresponding Instagram. We should be having some pictures more uploaded as we continue our fall events and state house events to see what's going on. And MA Legislature.gov, MA Legislature.gov. is the legislative website. As every week, I encourage you to create your own account there and follow bills and watch public hearings and sessions, both formal and informal, on the website at your leisure. TackyChen.org. We actually put a lot of Snap stuff up this year. Not necessarily the program itself, but also local organizations that can help with food insecurity. We do encourage folks to try to help your local organizations any way you can. I know it's tough for all of us, but pick an organization that you like to support, and your little a bit of generosity makes a big difference. And of course, QATV at QATV at ORG. Joe here would love to hear from you. Actually, just talk to Joe if you got a problem. You don't have to call.
I don't know how much I can help, but they can talk to me.
Feel free to let Joe express your opinion on bills in committee to Joe.
Well, I mean, if you're a Quincy resident, 18 or older, you can come here and do your own show.
Oh, that's true. I think that's something we could talk about more next time, actually. I think people don't
Sure.
realize that QATV is a community service, and anyone in the community can participate and actually learn a lot about media.
Yes, absolutely. We have classes that train you in all the technical aspects, and then away you go.
Absolutely. And Mark and Joe and John and everybody there, does a great job helping people out.
Well, we thank you for that, and we thank you for taking time to talk with us every week, Tacky.
Good talking to you, and what's next week? It's a busy week next week. But no, obviously we'll get see you again in a week or two.
Yes, it's not Thanksgiving yet. We still got a little time.